Is your business struggling? Do you need a custom business plan to get ahead? All you need to do is ask Sharifa, the premier business consultant who is focused on your success. From digital marketing to business planning, I bring over 25 years of experience to work for you. As a host of three different talk shows, I can get you connected to your audience right away. Visit AskSharifa.com for more information. Do not face the unknown alone. Thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an incredible story for you today. I love it when our guests are so diverse. I mean, it's nice to have a nice, safe conversation, to speak to people from the same industry, same background, same business even. But when you take individuals from different backgrounds, five strangers, and throw them into the conversation, you never know what's going to happen. And something tells me today is going to be an interesting conversation. So I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. There's someone in your network, maybe in your house, maybe a coworker, maybe a neighbor, but there's someone who needs this information. They're starting their business. They're starting on their entrepreneur journey, and they won't have this information unless you go ahead and share the show with them. Because as I always say, friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're introducing your friends to our show, I'm going to introduce one of my new friends, Miss Tammy Belt. Tammy wanted to be a rock star when she grew up, but couldn't sing on key. So she sings the praises of others. In 2002, she launched Blue Cube Marketing Solutions to transform the way companies and nonprofits approach communication strategy and community engagement. Good morning, Tammy. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. Thank you so much for being here. It's an honor.
You are so welcome. Thank you for joining me. So tell us, who are you, what do you do, and what are you passionate about?
I'm passionate about stories. Stories saved my life. From changing the ending of ghost stories that I read when I was young, so I wouldn't meet a deadly demise, to poems that wrote me starting at age 12, and poetry was a form of therapy for me to get my feelings out, to now singing the praises of others as a PR person. I wholeheartedly believe that everyone has a story someone in the world needs to hear for insight, inspiration, or to know that they're not alone.
Wow. Now, you said you love stories. You started off when you were young. Part of that was poems. How do you incorporate that into what you do today, into the stories you create for your clients?
Well, I published a collection of the poems in 2015 in a book. And it was a 360 moment in my career, because that was sort of the beginning of my storytelling career. That's how I know how important it is to be seen, heard, and understood, to be able to get your story out. And it doesn't have to be, you know, published in the media. You know, it doesn't have to be that, but just in a conversation, in passing, in telling somebody, just to share your story, to relate to people and to let them know that they're not alone. It's human nature. It's one of our needs, is to be seen, heard, and understood. It is so important. And in my journey of writing the poems, even though I didn't let anybody read them for years, once I got them out, I was able to separate the emotion from what happened. I would go back and reread them once a year, not to live in the past, but just to review. And then I could see them from a different perspective, from a 20, a 30, a 40, a 50-year-old woman's eyes. And the perspectives changed. And one of the things that I want to do in the future is to help women who've been abused rewrite their story, because I was able to do that.
Wow, I'm impressed. But what's interesting to me is I'm listening to your voice, I'm listening to your tone, and you have an energy of like a therapist or a social worker. You know, I'm not hearing that, I mean, not to judge, you know, but I'm not hearing that, like, let's get your story out there, let's make the sales. It's more of a, like, a nonprofit energy.
Yeah, well, I've worked a lot with nonprofits. I was born and raised in Las Vegas. It's my town. I believe in giving back. I watched, you know, my grandpa, my dad, they all gave back. They were entrepreneurs, and I watched them give back to the community and help build this community. My family's been in Vegas since 1936, so it's like it's my town, and I feel an obligation, you know, to give back. So yeah, I do a kinder, gentler. I'm not that salesy spin doctor kind of. No, I mean, literally, I use stories to build brands, to engage in conversations, build relationships, and shape the perception of the brand.
Wow, I love it. I love it, Tammy. I am going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Ms. Carol Limpert. Carol started her career as a professional actress and now works leaders, helping them increase their executive presence by learning the skills actors use to have great stage presence. In her previous life, she was a career counselor and ran a program called the Job Finding Club. Good morning, Carol. How are you?
Hello, Sharifa. It's really nice to see you again. We had a chance to have a conversation last October. I'm quite flattered to be invited back.
Absolutely. I remember you. I kept looking. I'm like, I know I've seen her. I'm like, maybe she's an actress.
Well, sometimes it happens. People recognize me because they might have recognized me from something. I was selling a can of soup. I was on something with Jimmy Smits. But in this case, we actually did have a conversation.
I keep telling people I just turned 45. My memory's not the best.
Yeah. No. All right. You know what's going to happen after 45? Yeah. Menopause comes on. And they say one of the things, hot flashes, all of that as well, you start to lose your nouns. You're like, what is the name for the, who is the, and proper nouns? You know, you just lose them. They're gone.
Well, thank you for that heads up. I've been wondering about what's going on in my brain.
Yeah, there you go. You're losing your nouns. You got to open up your medicine cabinet to figure out where they went.
This is going to be fun. I can already tell. We're going to have a great conversation. Carol, what does acting have to do with self-confidence? How did you use acting to have a better stage presence?
Well, what happened is there was a moment early in my life where I didn't know how to act and I didn't have self-confidence. And it was, in fact, the very first time I raised my hand for leadership. So in the third grade, I'm sitting at the front row of my third grade classroom. My teacher, Mrs. Lanier, she's counting, Tammy, I'm telling a story. So here we go. she's counting ballots because it's the last week of school and it's my last chance to be elected class president. And she turns to all the kids and she's like, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, final class president for Francis Scott Key Elementary School is, and she does not say my name. She says, Eileen Pfeiffer, who had already been class president twice before. So I go home crying and I tell my dad what happened. And my dad says to me, did you campaign? And that was like a big word for a third grader. I'm like, I don't know what, no, I don't, I guess not. I don't even know what that is. Then he says, because he knew I was shy, did you go and tell all the other kids why you wanted to be the president? What was your big idea? I had a big idea to throw a pizza party. He goes, well, did you tell anybody? No. So the next year, fourth grade, my parents signed me up for drama class. And just forcing me to get up again and again and again in front of the kids and start to understand that you could step into a role and that you could start to feel the confidence of the character and that that would then give you confidence. That's where my journey really started. So in elementary school.
Wow, wow, wow. I want to go back to the campaigning or not campaigning. Yeah. And this is a whole different direction, but you know, I'm curious about these things. Before your dad asked you this question about campaigning, and I know this was, you know, 20 years ago, a long time ago.
Yeah, we'll say it was only 20 years ago. You're lovely.
Right. But how did you think you were going to just win through osmosis?
Oh, yeah. So this is a really smart question, because at that moment in my life, and I think, and I'll be curious to hear what Beth thinks too, because I know this might be in line with the work that she does, and Tammy too. I think a lot of people think if they show up and they do hard work and they do their, you know, I'm in third grade. If I do my homework, if I get good grades, if I eat my broccoli, things are going to be fair and I'm going to get my shot. I'm going to get my turn. And if I follow the rules. So those are the rules. Those are the rules of followership. They're not the rules of leadership. because leadership demands this something more, something else. You have to get other people, as Tammy was talking about, understanding what your story is, and then getting that as everyone's nodding here now, okay, I see everybody's with me. And now that I see that you're with me, then I can get you to start to see what the future might be, what the next thing might be, both for my benefit and for your benefit. And I think that there's political campaigning, which I know you're familiar with, but there's also just in life, whatever a person, you know, your listeners, whatever you happen to be doing for a living, you have to get buy into your ideas, whatever those ideas might be, in order for you to be successful at whatever it is that you do. And I see Beth is nodding like crazy. So I'll be curious when you get to her, what she has to say.
Well, let's come back to you, Carol. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Ms. Beth Wanson. Since 2015, Beth has been a CEO and founder of Navigating Challenging Dialogue. She has coached hundreds of C-suite professionals in Fortune 500s and the nonprofit sector to have meaningful, drama-free conversations. Clients learn to end miscommunication, mishaps, chaos, and costly conflicts. Good morning, Beth. How are you?
I'm great. How are you today?
I'm excited to hear your thoughts.
I have a lot of thoughts. So what do you want to hear about?
Before we get to your thought, let's talk about who you are, what you do, and what you're passionate about.
Sure. So what I'm passionate about is shifting the way that leaders lead and workplaces function, and doing that through the lens of self-awareness, emotional self-management, and understanding how the energy we bring contributes to drama, chaos, and conflict. And so I was I grew up in this organization where I rose to the top really pretty quickly and managed a sales and marketing team that was super successful. But I would never had any training on the people side or the soft skills side or how the brain works or what motivates adults or how adults learn and engage. And so I utilized everything that I saw around me, a lot of which was manipulative or really pushy. I was the queen of sarcasm. I mean, I grew up in a family of five outside of Boston. And so sarcasm is our love language. Like whoever gives the best zinger wins, right? But then as I got into the work world, what I realized was sarcasm also creates disconnection. And a lot of people don't even translate sarcasm. They don't even understand what it is. And so while they're laughing along with you, that's preventative to keep from being the target of your next sarcastic comment. People are trying to join up with you when you're the sarcastic one. I didn't know any of that. And so I did that job for 13 years and we were highly successful. I loved my team loved me, but I got really burnt out and I began wondering, what if there was a different approach? What if there was a different way to be able to lead, empower, inspire, and motivate people in the workplace? And so that's when I began doing all my research. I worked for an organization for 3 years that worked with tribal leadership and Native American tribes and bands across the US and Canada. And so I learned so much about leadership during that time, more than I taught, because every tribe has their own leadership structure and norms and powers and traditions. And so I spent about three or four years really pulling everything together. And then I began developing my program, Navigating Challenging Dialogue. And that's the foundation of all the work that I do in the world to help people show up in ways that are really healthy, taking care of their self and being aware of their emotions and how they impact others.
Wow, wow, amazing. I applaud you. Now I want to go back to that moment when you said to yourself, there has to be a better way. Usually something happens. There's some conversation, there's some incident where you're like, I can't do this anymore. Was that true for you, or you just woke up and said, let me try it a different way?
No, that was true for me. I loved what I did. I loved my team. I loved the work, but the inter-organizational conflict and maneuvering and politicking and strife really got to me. I mean, I gained a significant amount of weight. I was I still love wine to this day, but I like a glass of wine now. I was drinking, you know, a bottle or a half a bottle every night just to try and bring down my adrenaline, my cortisol. So when I left there, it took me a while to reprogram myself and to get myself back kind of healthy, because I was truly operating in that fight or flight zone, that adrenaline, cortisol triggering me, then triggering my emotions and making me want to protect myself even when I didn't have to. And that really burns you out. That fries you. And so it was through that process of, I've got to get healthy. I don't like who I'm becoming.
No, you work with people on chaos and drama and conflict, especially in businesses and organizations. Do you find that it's the people that are causing the most drama, chaos, and conflict who are the ones who are absolutely oblivious to it? You know, they see the problem, but they don't know that they are the problem. How do you deal with those situations?
Well, we've been socialized to believe that there's certain ways to get productivity and to get accountability. And we've been socialized to believe that those are manipulative, that they're coercive, that they're holding the carrot and the stick mentality. And the truth of the brain-based research says that's not how humans engage and respond. That's not what motivates adults. And so people are just acting. I always say there's no bad people. It's just people that haven't taken my program yet. because they're behaving in the way that we've been socialized, very competitively, not collaboratively, very judgmentally. We are on a DNA level, we're designed to be judgmental humans, because judgment kept us safe for a really long time, kept us protected. Don't go outside the clan or the group, because then you'll be vulnerable, right? But now we live in a wide open collaborative world with all kinds of diverse, different people, and we're stronger together. That old framework that kept us safe is not necessary very often anymore, because saber-tooth tiger is not trying to get our baby very often. Sometimes it's super helpful. So I'm not asking people to get rid of that. I'm just asking people to become aware of it. So the people, when I go in to work with the worst bully, because in every organization, there's someone, and we've all met them. They're too valuable to fire because of their historic knowledge, their unique strength and talent, or the revenue they bring in for the organization. But HR deals with them all the time. The company's worried about getting sued. Nobody wants to work for them, but the company feels like they can't get rid of them. So when I go in to work with that person, everybody waits for me to come out all bloodied like Cruella de Vil's puppies. But I go through a heart-based process and just help them open up to see. People say I'm a corporate ninja. To just begin to see that there's a less burdensome way to get the results they want. And they can do that. And so through the coaching process, I've only had one client since 2015 who, somebody just asked me this, it's fresh in my mind, it was a long time ago, who I fired because I said, they're not going to change. They're bad for your organization. I feel like they're going to keep traumatizing people and I can't continue with this.
Wow. So, what an experience. Carol.
I love my work.
Yeah, Sharifa, one of the things I've been thinking as I was listening to Beth talk, and the question that you asked about, is the person that's causing the chaos, likely they don't know that they're the one. It's like the person that's driving crazy on the highway and they come out unscathed, but behind them, there's a whole bunch of accident, right?
Right.
And what I often find, I'll be curious if Beth finds this too, is that one of the areas of blind spot is that the person who is in charge of other human beings, so the boss in any level of the hierarchy, doesn't understand that when they come to work, that their power amplifies their mood. Their power amplifies. So the example you gave, Beth, was maybe around the sarcasm. If I'm in my family and we're all being sarcastic with each other, we're kind of on an equal playing field. But if I'm the boss and I'm being sarcastic with my team, the sarcasm is amplified and it lands on the team in a different kind of way. And the big blind spot is I just wake up every morning, go to work, and I try to get done what I need to get done. I don't necessarily, there's a handful of people that might be consciously manipulative, but I don't think that every boss in the world shows up at work going, I'm going to wing my power around today. They forget that their power is amplifying. If they're in a bad mood, it's a really bad mood for their team. If they're in a good mood, everybody's jubilant, and suddenly that's the day they want to ask them for something. And so it strikes me that that's an area that can be a big blind spot for people, that their own power amplifies their mood and that that impacts everybody around them.
Yeah, I've never worked with anybody who wakes up in the morning and says, I want to be a jerk and I want everybody to move away from me and not want to work with me. But there's this book and this thought theorist who talks about the power paradox, which is the higher you go up, the less self-awareness you have, the less open to feedback you have. And ultimately, that makes you more disconnected and more isolated. And so that's why when many people, as they get to the pinnacle, to the top, where they have the most power, what I hear from them as coaching clients is, I don't want to do this anymore. I just want to go start a cupcake factory or sail around the world or open a winery. And the reason is because they've gotten so disconnected. They've gotten so in an echo chamber.
Yeah,
that they feel that conflict all the time. So I think you're, I think Carol, you like are spot on with that assessment.
Yeah.
Tammy, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Well, as people tend to go up in power and in management, they become more siloed, like you said, disconnected, just like each department is disconnected from the other one. You can't work in silos when there's no communication throughout the organization. Before I started my own company, I worked in-house doing PR and marketing inside companies. And I worked at a nonprofit religiously sponsored hospital in Henderson for 7 years. And the among the departments, the fight for budgets, the fight for everything. Mm-hmm. And I was in a unique position because I was the marketing department, and I got to go and tell the stories of people and departments all throughout the hospital. So I could pollinate each department and bring them together. And I said, do you know why radiology does this? They don't do this to piss you off. They do this because these are the set of rules and regulations they need to operate under. And once people understood that, once they were aware of that, you know, they weren't in their own little fiefdoms. They could see the big picture and their part in the school play. And it opened so many things up. It was just amazing. And another reason that people I've found in telling so many stories is hurt people hurt people.
Mm.
And you know, it's been said that you're the sum of the five people that you hang around with most. I disagree. I believe you're the sum of the five people that you listen to the most. And if you don't have the right people providing you feedback, if you don't have the right people providing you feedback, you don't know. They are your blind spots. And you just keep showing up, exerting your, you know, your influence, your power, you're hoping to be seen, heard, and understood. And all you're doing is disconnecting. I would also handle internal communications a lot and getting everybody on the same. It's like herding cats. But you have, because everybody has their own priorities, which they need to, especially in a hospital. I mean, you have to know what you're doing. And everybody needs to work together for the ultimate goal of the health of the patient and of the hospital, you know, or the organization, whatever it is. Everybody needs to be on the same page. And the thing is everybody markets you. So you have to get everybody to know what the big prize is, the big goal, their part in the school play, and how they are, each and every person is significant.
Tammy, when you say that you are the sum of the five people you listen to the most, do you mean like 2021, those five people, or I still have the voice of my mother in my head from when I was 5 years old, those people?
Yes, and yes.
Okay.
Not necessarily five people. There's something that I've I say, and I've posted a graphic before, it's when you look into the mirror, who do you hear?
Nice. I want to touch back on the feedback piece you brought up, because that's so critical, particularly as you move up in power. As I said, we stop. The higher up we get, the less we listen to feedback. And so I just published a book on feedback, which is why it's super interesting to me, using the Navigating Challenging Dialogue process. And so one of the exercises that I have people do in the book and have all my executive clients do is to ask three people for feedback. One that you trust, one that you don't trust so much, you've had conflict with them, and one you have no idea what they're going to say. And pick something really specific to ask for feedback on, not the, hey, how am I doing? Like is not a feedback question. Feedback question is, how do you see me partnering with other departments? How does my leadership impact your ability to grow and develop? Like those types of things, really specific. And then just sit and listen to the feedback, and whether you integrate any of it or not, notice how it feels. Notice how it feels. And then just take some notes, and you don't have to agree with feedback, but listen for the patterns and trends of what is revealed under the words. Yeah. So someone might give you a piece of feedback on something that you don't agree with, but it may be an indicator if you see a trend of a behavior that you do that isn't beneficial or helping people grow. So that I encourage people to proactively ask for feedback. So many people have it mixed up where they go, well, I get it on an annual performance evaluation. That's not feedback. That's a performance evaluation, which is tied to income. That's what that is. Right. Feedback is a methodology to help you close the gap and to grow and develop. That's what feedback is.
So Beth, I think that's connected to what Sharifa asked me at the beginning about how does an actor build confidence? How can an actor teach somebody else to build confidence? So one of the things that happens for an actor is you get cast in a play. And on the very first day of rehearsal, you are surrounded, and you use this metaphor, Tammy, of like, you got to play your part in the play of your life. But in for real, when you're doing a play, you show up on the very first day of rehearsal with 12 total strangers. And in 4.5 weeks, you have to have a saleable commodity because people are going to buy tickets to come and see that show. And the only way that that happens, to Beth's point, is the director's job is to give each person who's rehearsing feedback on it minute by minute by minute basis. Move stage left. Oh, that's not working. Try it with a higher voice. Oh, now you sound like you're angry. Be a little more seductive. Like it's the director's job, yes, to give that kind of feedback so that everybody is working in harmony. And so I think that what actors learn is that feedback helps them grow.
Yes.
And they crave it. And somehow our systems, our formal systems, to Beth's earlier point, unless you end up luckily having a very good manager that understands that and does that for you anyway, it's a big gap that's missing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Forbes did a study, and I'm going to quote numbers and I'm going to have them a little off by a few points. So I apologize. 70% of managers are hesitant, and leaders are hesitant to give feedback or say that they don't. But 65% of employees want it on a regular basis.
Yeah.
So there we have a gap right there.
Yeah. No, I understand. I remember working at a company and, you know, doing my best, trying my hardest. And I go for my performance review, and it was all these things that I need to work on or issues I need to improve. My little feelings were so hurt. And I went to my manager, like, what is this? Or whatever. She was like, well, Sharifa, you know, you were like 99%. You can't be perfect. And I was like, it was not about being perfect, but why didn't you point out any of those things beforehand? Why were you?
Yeah. The day it happened. Yeah, you had to wait 9 months to tell me that presentation I did in February didn't land very well. What's up with that? Yeah.
Yes. But her idea was, well, you can't be perfect. You know, everybody has room for improvement. I just felt it was the communication. And one of the things that I really loved about what Beth said in the feedback is that I always believe, and I was raised to believe, that truth resonates at its own frequency. You know, so when you get that feedback, so you may not agree with it, you may not have even heard it, but when they come through, when the information comes through and it's the truth, there's something in you that's like, maybe I do need to work on that, Tammy, I see you nodding. What are your thoughts?
Yes. And well, the best conversations begin by listening, and you're never going to know your blind spot until somebody tells you, because you literally can't see it. But as you listen to the feedback, don't listen for agreement or disagreement. Listen and know the filter that person is telling you the information from. Mm-hmm. Everybody has their own perspective and filter, and it doesn't negate what they say, but know who that person is. And on the flip side, you have to know who you are. You are not your job. Yes, you get performance reviews in, you know, at work, and that's your performance to do the job that you're being paid to do, to, you know, your part in the school play to further the mission and, you know, profitability of the organization. But know that you're not your job. And before you even take a job, make sure that you're the right fit. Everybody comes to a point where it's like, this isn't for me. Whether you hired a client or you've left a job, you have to know what you're willing to put up with, who you are, get your story right first, and make sure that you fit there. It might not be, you know, most of the time it's not a performance issue, it's political most of the time. Because if you can't do the job, you're gonna find out really quick.
Mm.
You know? So that's especially during this last year, when so many people, their entire careers were stalled, put on hold, wiped out. People are like, what am I gonna do? It's like, you are not your job.
Mm-hmm.
You're not your job. You're not what you do. You are who you are. And that is so important. All the serendipitous collisions of people, places, and passions that makes you who you are, makes you do what you do, why you do it, the way you do it. It's what you believe. Mm-hmm. And that all comes in to, you know, being able to look at the filter that people are telling you things from, and who you're hearing coming through. Are you leading your thoughts? Or is somebody else telling you who you're supposed to be and what you're supposed to do? So there's always two sides to the feedback. Yes, it's important to listen to. And again, it's not to negate what somebody's saying. Their perception is the reality. But what is their lens? How do they see the world?
Mm-hmm. No, you know? I completely understand. I remember another story. I got a lot of stories, by the way, Tammy. But I was working at another company, and the manager said to me, and they said, Sharifa, you intimidate people. And I said, I don't intimidate people. People are intimidated by me. You know, there's nothing that I'm doing to try to intimidate people. So I just remember that when you talk about the lens, you know, and I never allow people's lens of how they see me to affect who I am in the world, because that's their perception of me. And I'm like, that's what they are intimidated. That's a weakness on my part. But Beth, I'm pretty sure you see that a lot in the workforce, personality, somebody's intimidated by somebody. I remember another instance where I was at a company and a lady literally went to my supervisor and complained about me and about an issue because I let all the students go to lunch or whatever. But I asked her, I said, why didn't you just come to me? She was like, I couldn't talk to you. I was like, why? You know, people always have this problem where I'm like, just say what you have to say. It's not my fault that you felt that you could. I'm the nicest person I know. I tell people that.
I love it.
So Sharifa, I'm curious though, the day you got that feedback that was your manager or a colleague said you intimidate people, and that your response was, people are intimidated by me. Did you leave that though, pondering like, what might I be giving off that people might be feeling intimidated? Or did you just make it like, well, I'm just me, I'm going to do my thing, I'm a powerful woman, and they just have to deal?
They just had to deal, because that was where I was in my life. I was in a very secure part of my life. I wasn't trying to figure out who Sharifa was or who Sharifa is. You know, I know thyself. And at that point, I knew, especially in that environment, that I wasn't doing anything intentionally to intimidate people or doing anything where I felt people should be intimidated. Because to me, intimidation is a strong word. It's a very, very strong word.
Yeah, there's a lot of judgment in it, that piece of feedback. Yeah.
So I felt like if I was trying to intimidate somebody, there would be some recollection. I was like, yeah, Beth was on a show and I just intimidated her and I made her feel like she, you know, No. So that's me, but it's an excellent question. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that question.
Well, I'm curious because Tammy was talking about branding, like company branding, but also personal branding. And if we all generally agree, and I don't know if we do, that perception is reality, or at least for that person, perception is reality, then there's the dilemma of young Sharifa having just heard that part of her brand has the word intimidation wrapped around it. And so then as someone in the work world, you or the younger version of you or one of your listeners right now who's hearing this, we have to decide, am I content with, okay, I just am who I am. People have to deal. I now know that some people think that about me. How fascinating. Oh, well. Or do I go, oh, what 10% of that might be true? And what adjustment might I make because I'd like my brand to be something else? Not because I care that an individual person likes me, but if I'm going to achieve the goals that I've set for myself in this job, in this path, maybe that brand isn't going to serve me very well. So that was the thing that I was wondering about.
I like you, Carol. I like you. I like the way you think. You brought all of that through. But let me just say this to you. That was probably a good 15, 20 years ago.
Uh-huh.
So I was younger then. Looking back, I still would have felt the same way. And because my brand today in 2021 has gotten a lot worse.
Worse, you think?
And let me
say your right shoulder. It says less talk. That's your brand right there, baby.
Right. But right. But let me just say that to me, it's like a parent, right? You're either a parent or a spouse. When that spouse says to you, we need to talk. Right? Like, what do you feel? Like, to me, that's my brand. When Sharifa calls and we have to have a conversation, so I understand that. But it's funny because even in my personal life, I have about five friends. I have about five friends that literally we're the best of friends. We all grew up together. So I've known these ladies for like 30 years. And out of all of them, I'm probably the meanest, the most intimidating, right? They're nice, soft, sweet, little meek, little women, right? Powerful, but they're a lot softer. And they talk about Sharifa, you know, why do you say this? Why you could have said that nicer, but let them need something. Who do they call? They call you.
Right.
So I understand who I am and I get stuff done. So it is part of my brand. So I don't try to make it softer. I'm just blunt. I'm short, sweet. This is who I am. And at some point I could probably improve it a little bit, but I love me.
So I have a different kind of lens on this. And there's so many things I want to talk about. Some things Tammy said I want to go back to. I mean, so much stuff. But the philosophy that I operate under is that everybody who shows up is a messenger of something for you, right? For you to look at inside. And so Sharifa shows up and I feel intimidated. My work is to say, okay, don't shoot the messenger, but what's the message for me about me in that intimidation piece? And then the tool is for me to become curious and say, hey, Sharifa, I have a question for you. Sometimes your energy feels intimidating to me and I just want to have a better idea of what's happening for you. Well, I just get things done. I'm to the point. I'm blunt. There's nothing personal happening here. This is just how I show up and who I am. So I'm not having opinions about you and that. I'm just moving through my process to get stuff done and be as clear and clean as I can in my conversation. That's the essence, I think, of understanding this. The thing I want to touch back on that Tammy said, which is, and I hope I can pull it up fully, because I think we're going to go through a grand experiment now with the way things are moving in the world, that knowing who you are within an organization, and the tech world has been operating in this way where they have been creating all of this wraparound stuff. So that when you go to work for one of the big tech, you know, one of the five or six really big tech companies, you don't have to worry about who you are because your dry cleaning is done, your parking is there for you, all your services are provided, your meals are provided, you can bring your family to lunch. You are the company. There's social events that are created for you to be part of and your group becomes that company. And I just read this fascinating blog by a woman who just broke away from one of the tech companies. And when she did, she truly felt like her identity was lost.
Mm.
Now we're going into a time when the tech companies are saying, you don't have to be on site, or you only have to be on site for X amount of time of your work or whatever. And it's going to be interesting to see how loyalty to that company is going to shift and how people may be more willing to move from job to job or to get back in touch with who they are or to identify that, get reestablished with who they are now that they're not in the pod, in the container of the company day in and day out for the majority of their life. I think it's going to be fascinating to watch how autonomy in the tech workforce shifts. We're going to see some big changes, I think.
Is the implication, though, Beth, that the companies are deliberately doing things that create a cult-like environment?
I don't know if they're deliberately doing that or not. I don't have the ability to assess that, but I think it's part of the outcome.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
When it's part of the outcome. I mean, if you work at Google, you call yourself a Googler, you have a Google identity. If you work at Facebook, you have a very big Facebook identity. And I've worked with people who work there. I've worked with people who've been bought, their company's been bought by one of the big tech companies, and now they're absorbed into the culture. And I've worked with people who have made an intentional shift out. And I'm just getting to see the process that people are going through as we're coaching, but I don't have any idea what the intention of the hierarchy is. I don't know that, but I know what some of the outcome is.
Well, I can say in Hollywood, this idea that all of your needs are provided for, that happens as well. You show up on set 6 a.m, someone's going to make sure food is there for you. The wardrobe that you need to wear for the scene is laid out for you. If you need to have a doctor's appointment, some flunky is going to make that for you. All under the bigger, we have 14 days to shoot this film and you need to focus 100% on getting this project done. Yes. So those things have existed for a long time in certain industries, and that's project-based industry. So the idea that a long-term career at a place like a Google or an Apple or a Facebook, a tech company, insert here, et cetera, I see Tammy has something she wants to add in. if you're a leader in one of those companies, you want to measure employee engagement and you're hoping that people want to come to work and feel good about working and achieving what the mission is. But there's this other piece around it that might, if we're stripping away people's autonomy and personal identity, that could be a little troublesome.
Well, and I want to hear from Tammy. In these organizations, there are employee engagement surveys that become part of your evaluation.
Yes, so that's right.
How your employees are feeling, how engaged they are, if they're at flight risk, all of these things become part of your compensation package, your performance evaluation. And so I think like this one woman in this blog was saying, she said, I suddenly realized I don't have a doctor. I don't have a dentist. I don't have an affiliation with a banking organization. Like I'm restarting my whole entire life from the most basic needs. Whereas if I leave my job or my company, I still have all of those things intact. They're things that I created. I have a relationship with. Tammy, what were you thinking?
Well, it was interesting because, yes, there are certain companies that are like all encompassing and they're like their own little town. Mm-hmm. But more and more companies, especially HR people, they're like, why won't employees be loyal to the company? And it's because companies aren't loyal to the employee. You used to be the company man, the IBM, the whatever, and you stayed with the company and the company took care of you, your insurance, your retirement, everything. And you stayed with the company forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. And they took care of you. You took care of the company. They took care of you. Companies quit doing that. They kept making employees more dispensable. You were only worth what they could replace you for. And they continue to replace you for younger, cheaper help. So there wasn't loyalty to the employee. So there wasn't, the employee wasn't loyal to the company. Now you get into these cultures and we've got one here in Las Vegas, Zappos. I mean, to listen to the story, and I know people that work there, I know people that have left, And it's really interesting, and everybody has their own individual experience. It's not, you know, do you lose yourself in that culture? Is that really community? And what is culture other than your relationship to the company and the community of your coworkers? But is it always healthy to hang out with everybody that you work with only? It is to a point, but that can't be your whole world, because if for whatever reason you lose your job, or all of a sudden you're working from home for a year and you're cut off from that pipeline, what happens? You know,
I agree. I hear what you're saying, Tammy, because yeah. Take it from someone like myself who's been laid off 8 times.
Oh, wow.
My identity was caught up in quite a few jobs. And then also, I believe you mentioned it earlier, as far as you just have to take something. You have to accept some kind of position, because after continuously being laid off, I had to figure out how to maintain my life. And so instead of, you know, taking some time to look for the perfect or the ideal job, I had to take whatever was offered because I had bills. Also, you're correct. And we have changed as a society. There used to be loyalty from companies, and that only isn't just keeping employees as dispensable or seeing them as dispensable, but also the benefits that were offered. I remember growing up, it was standard. Like, it wasn't even a thought whether or not you had benefits. You had benefits. That's just what it was. You know, you had a 401k, you had things that actually tied you to the company. You know, that's where my 401k. So to me, this was more of the positive to being tied to a company, you know. But now when all you have is your salary and the company across the street is willing to pay me $5 an hour more, what's going to keep me there?
Yes. And I want to make sure we don't confuse these wraparound services with the company being loyal. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, all of these companies are about shareholders, performance, stock prices, all of those types of things. So as soon as you're not contributing in that way, in the way that they need you to, these wraparound services are not about long-term loyalty in most of the cases. Capitalism has shifted to a very different place that is not about loyalty. It's about productivity. It's about how much you're getting out. It's about, you know, all of those types of things. Which are good, but my mission is to change it so that we can still have outcomes, but we can still have healthy workplaces where people are emotionally aware, where people are managing their energy appropriately, where it is about outcomes. It's not about all of the other punitive, manipulative stuff.
And it's not just about a healthy company. It's about a healthy community, a healthy world. Capitalism has a dark side, and we've seen a lot of that. And it has cost our planet and our community, our, you know, individual communities a lot. And more as people are branching off on their own, and more companies are staying private and not getting caught up into Wall Street, there's going to be an exchange that's being built. It might not be up or not yet, but it's for social good. You know, back in 2002, one of the founding principles of my company was to change the way organizations thought about community engagement, giving back, because that creates more loyal employees, a better place to live, work, and do business. It builds the industry, your community, and you not only get more press coverage, but you get more customers. It's not what you do, it's what you sell. It's who you are, that's your flavor of what you do. That's why where the personal relationship comes in, and what you give back. And more employees, especially the younger generations, they care about what the company does, what they stand for, and they will, that's what's important to them. You know, one of the best ways to build relationships is to bond over the passion for a cause. It's huge. It's personal, because there's a personal connection to why you like one cause over another. And I think that the whole landscape is changing to not only, it's not only profits. I mean, it's a triple bottom line. And it's not only profits, but what effect does this product or this service have on our entire ecosystem? You know, all of a sudden we're finding out that certain things were bad or this wasn't good and nothing was checked. They were just like, go make money. And it, no.
Tammy, are you familiar with a gentleman named Aaron Hurst, H-U-R-S-T? No, he's written a book that's called The Purpose Economy. And it sounds like that's what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And he really is painting a picture like with this new, what they are now referring to as Generation Z. I'm not sure if that's the right nomenclature anymore, but you know, who are going to be leaders in the next decade or so, being because of living through a pandemic, living through social change, social justice movement, that workers are going to be much more looking for places that are purpose-driven kinds of businesses, and that's where they're going to want to be working. And he's written a really fascinating book you might be interested in. A-A-R-O-N, Aaron Hurst.
Thank you. Yes,
you're welcome.
A friend of mine, a colleague, actually from across the pond in England, Sangeeta Waldron, she, during the pandemic, she's a PR person as I am, and she wrote a book during the pandemic, Corporate Social Responsibility is Not Public Relations.
Mm.
And even though it's a community building strategy, or a relationship building strategy, it has to be, it's not a gimmick. You know, it's not just, oh, we do this, aren't we good? You know, no.
So what do you do? What do you recommend to have that authenticity?
It has to make sense. I mean, it's a strategic business decision. I've worked with clients that it's whatever cause or whatever charity they want to support, there's a reason, there's a story behind it. Either there was something that affected one of the owners or one of the employees, and so the company rallies around it, or it makes sense for their company. I handled PR for a company that was, you know, motorcycles and off-road, and they got behind the Ride for Kids. It's a motorcycle road ride in different communities to benefit the Pediatric Brain Tumor Foundation. It made sense. It's not just because it's a good cause. There was a reason for it. You know, and it's not opportunistic. It makes sense. You can tell when somebody's being fake. You can tell when they're smiling and signing the check or doing this or doing that. I saw community engagement being done wrong inside companies. When I worked at the newspaper, they would give ad space, they call them house ads, to charitable organizations. And that was great. It gave them exposure. There was nothing wrong with that. But the employees didn't know. I started bringing the employees in, and it was Christmas in April. It's rebuilding now, whatever. It's like a Habitat for Humanity. They don't just build houses, they refurbish them. I'm like, we need to have a team of people. You know, the newspaper needs to have a team. And it was so cool to watch employees from all different, you know, siloed departments come together, show their strengths, work together for a purpose. We couldn't all do the same things. You know, I was in an executive office, but I was the one that was cleaning the woman's bathroom because I'm not good at painting. I can't rewire anything.
So you cleaned the bathroom. Wow.
That's
doing what, something.
That's what that I knew how to do. And they're looking at me like, what are you doing? And I said, look, she loves to take baths. It was an older woman. I'm like, I can't imagine if my grandma wasn't able to take a bath. I'm like, I can't do the handyman stuff like you do. I need other people's honeys to do my honeydews. I would be doing a disservice to try to do some of these things, but I know how to clean.
Well, you did what you did. I mean, you did what you could. And I think that's the most important thing, doing something, making that step, the authentic step. Now, we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Beth.
Yeah, thank you. You know, the thing that came up for me when Tammy was talking, and I talk a lot about this in my work, is the difference between being performative and being authentic. Right. And so we have a lot of things happening right now. We have conflict in workplaces. We have the need for empathy. We have the need for curiosity. And a lot of people are hearing this and they're trying to just perform those things versus understand them, internalize them, figure out how, what their approach to it is. So what I want to tell your audience is just simply that my mission is to change the way we show up and work, to reduce the burden of conflict and drama and stress, and to be able to show up authentic as opposed to performatively. So that's the work I do. That's what I'm passionate about. And that's what I love to connect with people around. So thank you for the opportunity to speak about this.
Absolutely. And if people are interested in connecting with you, how do they find you?
They can find me at ncdsolution.com. So it's just N as in navigating, C as in challenging, D as in dialogue, solution.com.
Thank you, Beth. Tammy, what do you have for us?
Oh my gosh. As I said before, everyone has a story. And I love that everyone today, you, Sharifa, Beth, and Carol, everybody talked about stories and in stories. And you have a story that's important. And not necessarily to be put out, you know, to the world, but you have a story. Get solid on your story. You can rewrite it. If you found yourself written into somebody else's story, you can rewrite it. And stories build brands. You have a hidden treasure trove of stories inside your organization. And the brand is a perception, but you can shape that perception through the stories you tell.
And where can people find you?
They can find me. My website is bluecube.com.
Love it. Definitely have to check it out. Carol, another great show, I'd say.
Oh, thank you so much. I always enjoy chatting with you and the people that you're able to pull together. I do one-on-one coaching to help people increase their executive presence and their personal brand and help them get clear on what their career goals and what they might need to do next to achieve those particular goals. And I also offer workshops to Fortune 500 companies and all under the bigger umbrella of communication skills. So how to have a tough conversation, similar to the kind of work that Beth does, not necessarily leader to employee, but often peer to peer, sometimes with customers and clients. And recently, my clients have been asking me to do some work around resiliency because of coming through the pandemic. How do we build personal resiliency and how do we build organizational resiliency? So if any of that is interesting to anybody who is tuning in now or tuning in later, you can check me out at my website, which is my name, Carol Lempert, CAROLLEM, like lemon, P like Peter, ERT.com. You can sign up for my newsletter. And I post every day on LinkedIn some thought leadership under those buckets that I just talked about. So if that is interesting that you'd like to follow along with that, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn.
Yes, absolutely. This has been an incredible show. I have truly enjoyed it. The conversation went a lot of different places, but yeah. I think we helped a lot of people today. I want to thank you ladies for being today's guest on the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. Just because you didn't catch the show live doesn't mean you're not important. And it doesn't mean we still don't need your support, because we do. Please go ahead and share the show. But as always, I ask that you not just watch the show and that you not just share the show, but that you support our guests. Our guests are here this morning to support you, to provide you with their advice, their information, their journeys, and their stories. So support them. Visit their websites. Their website link is in the Facebook post. But as always, follow them on social media. Reach out to them. Send them a message. And when you do, please let them know. Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Struggling to increase your sales or website conversions? Are you looking for new ways to promote your business through social media or any other campaign? If yes, then you're at the right place. Ask Sharifa has 25 years of experience and the track record to guide you to success. From business planning to social media marketing, from website designing to website development, from search engine optimization to paid traffic, we will research your business, your products and/or services, and the competition to develop a custom growth strategy for your business. Contact us now, and we will help you bring your business growth to the next level. For more information, visit www.asksharifa.com.